I will. I will find
Thank
that
you.
Guy.
Goodbye.
Who's shot to the heart, and you're to blame.
Why are you such a stupid asshole? Would you really like to know? Well, here you see. Remove your clothes and the vet will show you how. You went to school where you were taught to fear and to obey. Be cheerful, fit in, or someone might think you're weird. Life can be perfect. People can be trusted. Someday I will fall in love. A nice, quiet home of my very own. Free from all pain. Happy and having fun all the time. It never happened. Did it?
This is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of propaganda and boring music on the radio, well, there is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Next on Free Radio at 101.1 FM, it's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides with a special guest, Roger Mensch, a medical marijuana, we hope not prisoner, but a man on trial. We're going to be talking with him and his son, Sean. Stay with us.
I got trouble brewing in my coffee pots. There's no sugar in my bowl, 'cause the tax man came and gave it all away. My head is pounding, and the bill don't ever stop. Got no dog for my bone, and somebody said supposed to be another gravy day today. Been twisted and broken, things just ain't what they used to be. Been twisted and broken, somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Well, time bombs are ticking, one's about to go off. The terrorists are everywhere. I hear they got a hideout down at Channel 8, you know. Every time I get up to turn my TV on, one of those guys smiles at me and tell me what the survey says to think today. Yeah, bent, twisted, and broken. Yeah, things just ain't what they used to be. Bent, twisted, and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Birthday in 1952, and I still ain't the president, and there were no heroes from the Vietnam War. Sometimes I sleep in the back of my car, But you know that's against the rules. The rent just gets so damn high. And the boss man says, 7 days of work will do you good. Bent, twisted, and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. Bent, twisted, and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream.
That's right.
I say, a bit twisted and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. A bit twisted and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost that American dream.
And that's Bent, Twisted, and Broken by singer Mike True, who's was on the streets of Santa Cruz for some time, actually won a lawsuit against the city when they arrested him falsely for displaying that his CDs, the kind of music you just heard. And he picked up a parcel of change from the police department and from the city of Santa Cruz. He also helped to found the organization SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, which has its shindig every Wednesday evening. I guess had the 58th shindig, the 58th week of SAFE singing and speaking out and serving soup, actually. A lot of food and bread. Come on down there if you want to sing, if you want a soapbox, if you want to talk. And this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is a show about civil rights locally in Santa Cruz. I have a particular focus on poor people outside, but sometimes I deal with some poor people inside. And tonight on the air, I have as special in-studio guests Roger Minch. Have I got that pronounced properly?
Yes, you do, Robert. Thank you.
Sure. And his son, Sean. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
How you doing, Robert?
And actually, we better turn up your mic. Say something else.
Yeah.
There we
go. How's that?
I think we're better now, yeah. Now, I'm actually looking at a story you posted, or someone, I guess you did post it, online. Medical marijuana trial begins Tuesday in Santa Cruz. That's at www.santacruz.indymedia.org for those of you who are listening either in town or out of town and want to check that out. That's the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, good website, a lot of local stuff. In this story you post, you talk about how you are, in fact, going on trial, have been on trial now for 2 days, I guess, and there's some in and outs about that, and a whole bunch of phone numbers for people to call. I actually did 2 interviews with you, which I put on tape, but since I got you in the studio, I guess we better turn to the live number. Here you are. You look very distinguished. You look almost, well, a little bit elfin. How old are you?
I'm 49 years old.
But you're very distinguished for 49. Your beard is much trimmer than mine. You have a receding hairline. It makes you look very distinguished. You have some glasses that make you look like you've actually made like a college professor or...
A judge.
Might even be a judge. Might even be the Judge Barton might be here in the studio with us. You got a tie on. You, on the other hand, Sean, look a little bit more grubby and youthful, I got to tell you. And you can't... Yeah, but you're on trial for selling marijuana to patients?
Yes, I am.
So talk about that, because I know you were out this last weekend, both in Felton and in Santa Cruz on the streets trying to let people know about this trial. What's it all about?
Well, they came knocking on my door back in June 6, 2003. I guess they had got a heads up from the Monterey Bay Bank stating that my money smelled a little funny. And
smelled like Mary Joanna?
Yes, it did. And it's so bad that they said people were offended
about. The bankers were getting high and couldn't do their work, huh?
Yeah, I think so. This is back in Felton, California.
Wow.
And they watched my activity at the bank for a couple months and then watched my house for a couple days and got a search warrant, of course, and commenced to raid me about 7:50 in the morning on a Friday, stating that they had a search warrant and that they were the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, and I left them in. They asked, they said they had a search warrant for marijuana, and I told them that I had a valid medical marijuana card, and showed them. They walked me outside. Of course, there's probably 5 or 6 officers. They got their weapons drawn, and inside is my new girlfriend at the time and her daughter, 9-year-old daughter, and we were getting ready for her to go to school. And, guns pointed at her as well. They took me outside, handcuffed me, and then took me into a truck to interview me, right? And at that time in there, I think probably the best defense is keep your mouth quiet, just like they always say. But I had stated that I had sold. They asked me if I had sold, and I said, yeah, I did. But
the
I said,
fatal word, sold, right?
That's right.
But
yeah.
Proposition 215, the state initiative that guarantees medical marijuana providers and patients the right to cultivate, grow, and exchange marijuana, says you, in essence, can sell, provided it's not for profit, provided it's for reasonable compensation, right?
That's correct. And I said I sold to 5 patients that had valid IDs, and they commenced to take me to the jail. Spent the next 5 days in the jail. They actually... My bail was set at $5,000 Friday morning. Come about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they raised it up to $50,000 on bogus meth charges that were never pressed nor found, although it kept me in jail for 5 days. They never arraigned me, released me, and the process has begun.
Now, they released you on the same day that they started the medical marijuana card program, is that right? Or?
Oh, yeah, the day the... Board of Supervisors approved the medical marijuana card program as the day I was released from jail.
Released from jail, but not from trouble, apparently. This was a year and a half ago?
Yeah, a year and a half ago. The trial's been put off 5 different times.
By the district attorney's office?
Well, 3 by the district attorney's office and 2 on our side because of the doctor. Actually, even in the trial here, the doctor had a heart problem, wasn't able to appear.
But the doctor, what do you mean by the doctor?
The doctor that wrote my prescription.
Uh-huh.
They summoned him in to appear to discuss whether I had a valid medical recommendation or not. And he wasn't able to appear, but they did decide after a lot of haggling that, yeah, I did have a valid prescription.
Who is the doctor?
Dr. O'Connell from Daly City.
Uh-huh.
I had at that time they didn't have a card program around here, so it was Oakland or San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It was up the 3rd floor that I received my card. Now this is back in 2002. I've had a valid medical recommendation since 2001. I have back injury from a fall that I sustained being an iron worker back in 1989. I suffer from colitis. And at the summation today by the district attorney's office, he wanted to try to disgrace me because of my medical conditions.
What did he say?
That basically I had no valid reason to use medical marijuana. I basically only got a sore back and colitis, whatever that is. I just couldn't believe.
That was the phrase he used, colitis, whatever that is.
No, don't. You can't take me for word, but basically, my recommendations stated that I had back injury, colitis, dysphoria, And he made light of all of them.
What is dysphoria?
It's depression.
Uh-huh. Now, you also began a specific association, that a distribution center that essentially distributed marijuana under the name, I guess it's, you called it
the Hemporium.
Hemporium. I think of Hempinator, Hempophilia.
Oh, yeah.
Hemporium.
The Hemporium LLC.
Yeah, and that's a group that, how long has that been operating locally?
I formed it a month before they raided my house as a caregiving organization.
And have you been operating since they've raided, or have you stopped operating?
No, I've been operating since. The police have been to my house. They know that I have a caregiver's card. You know, what's amazing is, even though I had two patients testify that they received medical marijuana from me, the judge in the case doesn't believe that I satisfy the conditions making me a caregiver.
Now, this is Judge Samuel Stevens?
Yes, it is.
And this trial is just concluded in Department 4 today, I guess, after, 2 days?
Yeah, it started Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go to trial or to the jury tomorrow.
I want to ask you about why Stevens didn't want you, wouldn't regard you as a caregiver, but it seems the police regarded you as a caregiver because after this bust where they took away how many of your plants?
Oh, the officers, they took everything, 191 plants. They left me 3 mother plants.
And you've been growing since then and
yes, I received my caregiver's card as soon as the program started here in Santa Cruz. I've had it since.
And since that time, they have not further raided you.
That's correct.
So even though you've been selling to people regularly for reasonable compensation, I assume, as provided by Proposition 215, or have you been making huge amounts of profits that you should share with Free Radio Santa Cruz?
That's why I could not afford Ben Rice.
Ben Rice is a famous local attorney who offered his services to you. How much did he want?
$3,500 for the pre-trial, and then basically a bit of money afterwards.
Yeah, so quite a chunk of change.
Yeah.
And how much money did they confiscate from you in this marijuana-soaked cash that you?
$1,700. $243 on my person, $143 or $148 in a safe.
And I think there was a second, I was listening to some of the testimony, wasn't there a second $2,000 deposit you made at some point that they also confiscated?
$1,300 the remaining in the bank.
So there's so all in all, less than $5,000.
Yes.
And you are the big-time operator they've been pursuing in court for a year and a half now.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the Santa Cruz ordinance since '92 states that a caregiver can recover costs and reasonable compensation. Why I'm
excluded?
Yeah, why I'm excluded from that privilege? I'm not quite sure. I guess I said that I agreed that I said it. He said, "Do you sell?" And I said, "Yeah." And I guess I should have said, no, I just get reasonable compensation. And maybe that would have been the right word.
Well, it wasn't. The evidence that they presented, and I saw some of the trial, was not simply that you said those words, though that certainly was part of the evidence. They claimed that you had a grow operation, that you had plants, that you had a large electrical bill, that you you had 2 rifles that were unloaded. But the 22 rifles, not the most heavy weapon for defending yourself.
And no ammunition.
Right? No
they
ammunition.
Found no ammunition for the 22 rifles. I had a M18 taser laying on the TV set. My girlfriend also at the time had a stalker that's been jailed several times. And we didn't want to shoot anybody, but we did want to stop somebody that was possibly causing a problem. And, of course, the DEA just can't believe why I would have any type of protection, because everybody on medical marijuana is they're in wheelchairs and they can't attack you. And so why would I have any type of protection? I mean, it's just like foolish thinking.
Right. Marijuana is more, of course, costly than gold these days. So this was a DEA operation. Actually, before we get into that, let me again remind those listening, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and also www.freakradio.org. You're listening to Robert Mensch. Also in the studio is Sean Mensch. I'm Robert Norris. I mean, Roger Mensch. He's Roger. I'm Robert. Got to get that straight. But and if you want to call in, there's a call-in phone number. It's 427-3772. And 427-3772, area code 831. And if you want, you can also jump onto the Pages in Color website, where you can, hopefully, I will keep an eye on that every so often and see if you want to join that chat room, and I'll convey any messages from that chat room in case our phone line is busy or not operational or just, you know, for whatever reason. Feds were involved in this, but it wasn't the feds that prosecuted you. You weren't taken to federal court. You were being tried by DA Bob Lee, right, and some of his minions.
He's district attorney, so I don't know how he falls in there. I do know, though, that
he's the county district attorney, and you were being, I think you were charged with a state law, not a federal law.
Yes, yes. But the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Task Force, Narcotics Drug Task Force, is operated under a grant from the DEA, which one of the officers stated to. So, yeah. There's definitely DEA participation.
DEA
in this.
Money, right.
That's right.
But you weren't dragged into federal court in San Jose, at least not yet.
Not yet.
It continues to puzzle me. I actually, as I said before, you can see some of the discussion of this case and some of what's already been said here on the air is repeated on the website of Indy Media, the local news service. Check it out, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And I think it's really good that, Roger, you've been putting it up there, because I think that for those who don't hear this show, that's a way they can easily access it, and some people don't have time to listen to, however interesting, the longer kind of verbal conversation people have on the air. So for a year and a half, they've been, you know, taking this case to court, you weren't able to get Ben Rice as an attorney because he was too expensive. What about you got some other public defenders? How did that work out? I understand you're on your third.
Yes, my first public defender was Charlie Stevens.
Judge Stevens' son.
Yes.
Did he get kicked because of that or no?
I believe he left the district attorney's office.
You mean the public defender's office?
Yes, public defender's office. And then I was moved to Sarah McCarthy.
Uh-huh.
And
how was she?
She was great, but I got kicked because of a murder case that she's going to be handling.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I have Amy Wantello.
How's she doing?
Yeah, I think she's doing an excellent job.
Uh-huh.
We were hoping to be able to get in the caregiver position, right? Allow the law to be such to where I can be recognized as a caregiver.
Let's get back to that. You are, in fact, a man who supplies medical marijuana to people, and you've been doing that for how many years now?
I started at the end of 2002.
And again, even after you were arrested, you continued to how many people would you say you served between the time you were arrested and today?
I would say 100 to 150 people. There's probably 50 that are clients, that are people that come back on a regular basis.
You were able to do this with just three mother plants? Were you able to get other help from other people to do this?
No, actually, I was able to cut enough money. It takes time, right? Or you have to go up and buy them.
Mm-hmm.
It was really costly, the raid. I mean, they took everything that we had. Left nothing but a couple crumbs laying around for medical purposes.
How much does it cost to finance such an operation if you want to? I mean, to set up your grow. I mean, Free Radio Santa Cruz was subject to a raid where they took thousands of dollars of equipment from us back in September, and we had to get that all replaced by the community. The local authorities, District Attorney Bob Lee, the Sheriff's Department, the DEA, I guess, I don't know if the district attorney probably wasn't with the sheriffs when they came in, but they certainly have colluded in this whole case.
Oh, yeah.
They took your stuff.
There's a force behind it.
How much did it cost you to replace it? How much? What are the costs, the replacement costs of this kind of stuff? The grow room, the lights?
They took four 1,000-watt lights. They took the CO2. They took ionizers. We're talking probably around $4,000 or more than that.
So how, I mean, with the money wiped out of your bank account, how are you able to finance this restoration?
Luckily, I still had credit card and it hadn't been destroyed yet. And so I was able to slowly start back up.
We got a call here. Let's see what's cooking here. Hi, you're on the air with Roger, Robert, and Sean. Say that again. Hello? Hello? Looks like we lost him. Try calling again. I was a little slow on the uptake there, but the line is operational. 427-3772 if you want to talk to anybody here in the studio at Free Radio. We're talking about the recently concluded case of Roger Mensch, who is something of a mensch, it looks like, as he tries to continue to serve people medical marijuana in spite of the interference of local authorities. I thought the county was supposed to be sympathetic to medical marijuana use and distribution and that sort of thing. That doesn't seem to be your experience, does it?
No, I'm really quite amazed on the ongoing prosecutions by the Santa Cruz police. There's a jury going on right now in regards to another medical marijuana case.
That was one probably that concluded by already, like yours, or is
no? Been? They've been in deliberation for a week now.
And what's that case? You know,
I know it's got marijuana involved and guns.
Ah.
And
gun enhancement, I understand, could be rather serious. If they find you guilty, they can lop on a whole bunch of time. And you're accused of how many felonies here?
Five felonies. I have, the way it is I got it for possession, cultivation, manufacturing, and sales, and manufacturing hashish.
Were you manufacturing hashish?
Guilty.
Uh-oh. So is that allowed? Under Proposition
15? Yes, it is. Actually, it is. And it was included by the judge today. That, you know, it was a stickler point, and he concluded that, yes, it did.
Now, are we talking hashish or hash oil?
Hash oil.
Because hashish is a somewhat more potent form of, you know, it's the drippings off the
No, they're basically, dried. I mean, it's the same thing, though.
Same thing? Really?
Yeah, okay. It's THC.
I just remember my old college days. Those times have changed. Hash oil is much more expensive than hashish in the old days.
And I'm charged with a misdemeanor of having about 2 grams of mushrooms.
Now, was that also in trial today, or the mushrooms?
Yeah, yes. Well, I was in trial yesterday because one of the witnesses testified that they were taken from a teenager. And, I mean, I have two teenage children. She has 5. Mm-hmm. And
your partner?
Yeah, my partner. Mm-hmm. And my children are 19 and 20, or 20 and 21 now. Mm-hmm. And hers vary in size, so she handed them to me. They got put in the safe. And
then by them, you mean the mushrooms?
The mushrooms, yes.
Now, what? These are what, psychedelic mushrooms?
Yeah, that's what they say it is.
Uh-huh. And so the argument you made was that that these were not something you were possessing for sale, but they were simply possessing. Period. Or
yeah, evidently it's illegal to possess those. Or, yeah, it's illegal in 2 states, California and Georgia.
Not anywhere else?
Not anywhere else, which is really interesting.
This is psilocybin mushrooms?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. But that's not that's really not the main part. But the guns, you know, if they're able to get you, this is the difference between, one of the differences between my trial and the one that just went on, that's what I heard, was I have special allegations. And it's like I didn't use the guns or have the guns.
A special allegation is a sort of like an added charge or an added seriousness to the charge.
If you're convicted of another felony.
If you're convicted of one of these felonies of medical marijuana or not medical marijuana.
For sales.
Or mushrooms, then they can add on the fact that you had guns present as a special allegation.
That's correct.
I see. Okay.
And the other case that's going on now, evidently, I don't know all the facts, but they're not special allegations. They're regular charges, so it's a little bit different.
These are the 22 BB rifles that we're talking about, or?
Yeah, and actually how I come about them.
Is it a BB gun or just different than a BB?
It's a 22 rifle.
Which is not a BB gun. It's a different. So little pellets, little.
Shoots a bullet out.
Shoots a bullet, okay.
But
I'm not much of a gun person.
I don't know if you know this, but one of the guns were inoperable. The pin would fall out.
Uh-huh.
Well, we found out that it doesn't matter if your guns are operable or not. You're going to get charged with them. Which was just surprising to me.
That sounds like overcharging, man.
Well, they didn't find no ammo for the 22 rifles.
Right,
okay, and I got this taser for protection there, and I had a pistol in the safe that had a trigger lock on it. I'm not being charged with that one.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if I don't have any ammo, one doesn't really work, right, why should I be charged? I should be charged for having a non-lethal,
anything
most
they can
of the time,
find, it
taser.
Like that's what they're charging you with. I mean, that's.
Sure.
I mean, it sounds like it's. This, you know, they
should
want.
You shouldn't be getting charged with nothing.
That's Sean. So what about? Did they offer you a deal?
Yeah.
What was the deal?
They wanted me to confess to sales of marijuana and gun charges and take 9 months,
mm-hmm.
or. Plead guilty to two of the felonies and leave it up to the judge. And the last one, they wanted my guns and my money. And, you know, of course I would have to plead something to it, and there was no way.
They wanted to take everything that they took from you.
Yeah, basically.
It sounds like an extortion racket to me.
Well, sure. You know, they wanted that nice .40 caliber Beretta pistol that I had. That I bought, you know, before I got into this business, I used to be a Unix Systems Administrator for Cypress Semiconductor over in the Valley. And I specialized in their disaster recovery. And when the millennium come around, you know, there was supposed to be all kind of mayhem coming down. And so I bought something for protection at that time. And luckily, we didn't have the mayhem,
mm-hmm.
you know.
There was no breakdown in civilization, as was predicted by some.
That's right.
Breakdown in computers and so forth. You're on free radio, but you out there, you're listening to free radio. You can get on free radio. All you got to do is call in 427-3772. Phone line is open. Or you can check Pages in Color, www.pagesincolor.com. In case you want to leave a note off the air or some kind of message for us or for Roger, you can do that. You can leave me a message at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. H-U-F-F is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is an organization I work with, and also my personal voicemail is at that number, 423-4833. Is there a number of folks can reach you at, Roger, that you should they want to be supportive, maybe have some questions? Are you still operating this caregiving association?
Yes, I am.
And what's it called again?
The Hemporium.
The Hemporium. I'll better make a note of that. And how can people catch you before they haul you away? If they are, I guess the jury is deliberating even as we speak, right? Or
No, we will do our summation tomorrow, and then the DA.
We'll do a second summation.
Yes, and then
right.
They've got the instructions today, the jury instructions today, and we were not allowed to use the caregiver defense or allow any instructions in regards to the.
So they were just told, that though you were acknowledged to be a caregiver, you were not allowed to use the caregiver defense. Do I understand that right?
Yes.
They said they acknowledged that you had a car. They acknowledged that you fell into the definition of caregiver. That's what Judge Stevens said.
No. Well, there was people that testified that I was a caregiver to them.
But Judge Stevens denied that.
The corporation is called the Hemporium. I wasn't hiding anything.
Right.
And it states on my business card, on the labels, it's a professional caregiving service. And I have been able to operate ever since. I have a caregiver's card.
And since your arrest, you haven't been stopped?
No.
During the trial, have you, in the last 2 days, has anybody called up and tried to be a customer for the Hemporium?
Yes, sure. You bet.
You have good rates, but given the kind of prosecution you're suffering, I don't know how wise it is to ask you what your rates are. You recover costs. Is there a sliding scale for poor people? Is it the same for everybody who comes who wants to get medical marijuana? What's that like? What are the details on that?
Well, right now, I'd rather not go into it. I'd rather have the people call, and I can give people information. Right now, we're not set up to have a large quantity or large amount of people.
All your stores in the behind closed doors, so to speak, in the police headquarters or the DA's office or something?
Yeah. Sure.
So what has happened to that marijuana? Is that now no longer any good? Is it sort of...
That's what I understand. I hear it's definitely not usable.
So those plants that they stole were worth how much?
Well, let's see. Say $3,000-$4,000
total.
Well, not total. No, I was talking about budding. Total, about $8,000.
Huh. Well, maybe there's some happy sheriffs or court officials tonight, or somewhere in the last few months or year. This happened a year and a half ago, so one assumes that this. What's the half life of marijuana? How long is it good for? I mean, how long can they keep it behind lockers before it can be returned to people that they seize it from and still have its potency or be usable as medical marijuana?
You know, what we were allowed in was my expert witness today, Chris Conrad.
I want to talk about that, but do you have any idea about the answer to the last question?
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
Oh,
he had stated that the degradation of medical marijuana, 5 years, you're going to lose half the potency. Mm-hmm. And then if you put it in sunlight, or if it's in light, it degrades a lot faster.
Chris Conrad is a rather famous writer on marijuana, right? I think I've heard the name.
Yeah, he's a famous writer as well as an expert expert witness.
Now, is he a friend of yours? He came down because he's a buddy of yours, or because he was paid, or?
Oh, no. Yeah, we called him in. He's testified in 34 counties.
And you paid for this, or the DAs? The
no, I couldn't.
The taxpayers are paying for the expert
witness, because they're paying $1,500.
Just as they're paying for the trial.
Yes.
So the reality,
they're not. We are.
Right, but I mean, right now, it's the citizens of Santa Cruz County that are funding this prohibition operation that's going after you.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So
as well as, they got the grant from the sheriffs to do their little activity as well.
That was something that was brought out in the testimony yesterday by the public defenders cross-examining your defense counsel. She questioned this DA official who testified at length, and she pointed out that they receive a grant for him and for a half-time DA, or maybe even a full-time DA and some kind of secondary bureaucrat.
Yeah.
This is all a way of continuing to fund an operation. They have to keep showing results in order to keep funding these positions. Is that part of the rationale for this?
It's government's way of putting her hand in and manipulating state government. That's what they're doing.
Well, it sounds like it's a job program for the police and the DAs. I mean, is what it sounds like to me.
Well, what did they arrest? 700,000 last year?
Right, but I'm talking about this particular situation where you are facing this prosecution. It's part of an attempt to show results around, so they can keep their DEA funding, so they can keep this extra DA on.
I mean,
I, you know, I, it, it seems, you know, that that's And then they know what they're doing.
I mean, and then if they don't like what they find, they go and make something up and then blame it on the media person that the police use, right? I confronted them why they said there was meth at the house when there wasn't. And they just kind of shuffled that over to the PR person for the police department, said, well, he said that. And it makes you look bad, you know, when those things are written about you in a paper, right? There's an effect that happens. And those charges aren't true, never been charged with them. And I'm definitely happy of that.
So, but this will be coming back to Department 4 tomorrow morning in Judge Stevens' court. What time will that be happening?
It'll start at 10:45 tomorrow.
So you will then, for those who want, they can come and hear your defense counsel's concluding statement and the prosecution's concluding statement. Then the jury will go deliberate, and then they'll come back and haul your butt to jail, unfortunately, unless you get lucky.
That's correct. That's right.
And how much jail do you face at a maximum?
Around 12 years.
12 years.
12 years.
12 years in prison.
That's correct. 7 for the marijuana charges altogether, and another 5, and I believe, you know, that is not the max.
What's the max?
I think you can double that. Right, double that, what you got there. This is my first offense. I've never been arrested before. I'm a Vietnam veteran. A law-abiding citizen.
Have you tried... Sorry, Sean, did you want to say something?
I said that's very true.
You know, have you tried to get some assistance from other local medical marijuana providers? I know Andrea Tischler, who speaks on the air with the Compassion Flower Inn, is out of town. She's coming back tonight at midnight. But there are other activists. I mean, WHAM, Valerie and Mike Corral of WHAM, have fought a continuous battle against the federal intervention. In fact, Mayor Chris Crone, when he was mayor 2 years ago, had a special giveaway marijuana to patients shindig on the steps of the city hall area with which literally hundreds of people came to. And the media, of course, played it up big time. But here in our own city, in our own community, you are being, for a year and a half, hauled over the coals, now facing 12, maybe 24 years in prison for providing medical marijuana to people, and they don't even claim. What kind of profits do they claim you made? I mean, are they making claims?
They're not making claims that I actually made this certain amount of profit, because they can't prove anything. They can prove that I made some money off it, but they're claiming
that's
allowed
more
to make reasonable compensation.
They're claiming it's more than reasonable compensation, so surely they're going to have to argue. The prosecution has already done an argument that you are, I'm going to skip around here a little bit, but the prosecution has already done an argument that they made their first closing argument. In these cases, for those who don't know, the prosecution gets two closing arguments. They get to start a closing argument, do it, then the defense gets a closing argument, then the prosecution gets a second closing argument. The rationale for that is that they have to show you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, which is supposedly a very high standard. But I don't know. I'd be curious to know what percentage of people actually go to jury trials in this county are able to get not guilty verdicts or even hung jury verdicts, you know. But what are they claiming in terms of compensation that you should have, you know, where is their evidence? What are they saying is the evidence that you operated in a profitable manner beyond the Proposition 215?
Well, they actually showed that I had deposited $10,700 between February 11th and April 11th, which is 2 months.
Or basically
three bill periods, right? I mean, you got payments for the first of the month and the next first of the month, and your next one's coming up, right?
And what are your expenses per month as a grower in terms of what does it cost to run this kind of an operation per month, let's say?
Around $2,500.
So are they claiming then that during this potential 3 month period, though it's actually just 2 months from February to April, let's say 3 months though, because it's maybe one period intervenes here or overlaps. that would be $7,500. Are they claiming you made $2,500 or $3,200 profit? Is that what they're claiming?
Well, they're not kind of showing it that way. There's a couple people that I've sold to for a reduced amount of money because they are on disability. And then there is three people that didn't show up as witnesses. One, the person that had the paperwork, I had paperwork on the wall of an additional person. And that person's father's an attorney, and he didn't want to testify. Another person, Nick, moved out of state, that was one of my patients. Isn't coming here. Plus, there's a little history, but they were all valid, and they all hold valid medical IDs.
Right, but I mean, again, skipping back to the question I had for you, $2,500, are they claiming it, in essence, are they sort of saying that, are you, it was there an essence of profit, I guess, is the issue over that amount of time. Maybe I should ask this question after the final arguments are made to the jury. Well, the jury isn't going to hear this because I don't think they're going to be listening to this show. If they do, they'll be disqualified. And, of course, any jury member who is worth his salt will plead not guilty, period, regardless of whether you made $30,000 on this issue. Because it's obviously a question of basic rights.
What they did was he had me list my rent and my motorcycle payment and my automobiles, right? One's a salvage truck and the other one's a 92 BMW. Mm-hmm. But enlist with the chemicals and came up with an amount of $3,450. And then he took what I charged those people and subtracted that and said that there was an additional $2,000 there that was extra money. Well, you know, on that sheet didn't show anything about being able to be compensated for the person that's doing it. All it was is the cost of materials. It says in the Santa Cruz ordinance that you're allowed to recover or be compensated reasonably.
Is that also in the state ordinance?
It is now. Mm-hmm. It is in SB 420 saying that a caregiver is allowed to make reasonable compensation and to recover costs.
Huh. And do you think the jury is going to buy this in spite of the fact that Judge Stevens has said you're not, you know, you don't get care. If I understand this correctly, you don't get caregiver instructions? Is that what the...
Yeah, basically, he said that I didn't meet the health, safety, and housing provisions outlined. And
that's a provision that says you have to either be providing it for the health, safety, or housing of the patient involved?
That's correct.
And your argument to that was...
Oh, well, for one, I do provide health. I mean, medical cannabis provides healthy benefits to many, many, many people. Safe, when it comes in regards to safety, I mean, being a state-recognized corporation, I mean, this helps to make me a safer place to acquire your medical products. Don't you think that?
Well, it's certainly safer than the street, and it can be safer than having to transport your marijuana long distances from clubs in San Francisco and Oakland.
And the other thing we discussed was the corporation, limited liability company, is also a consultancy organization where people call in and ask how they use, say, honey oil. There's various ways. One of the most beneficial ways is through the vaporizer, or how to put a grow room together. It's not like just providing marijuana is what I do. I mean, it's a large part of it, but there's
other things involved. So, and the media has kind of ignored this whole issue with you. You haven't, you put in calls to the Sentinel or the Mercury News, Good Times, Metro?
Yeah. I had somebody said that they'd investigated from the Metro. You know, I've had people call the mayor, call Mark Stone and email him. I mean, that's what I did this
Mark Stone is a supervisor.
Yeah, uh-huh. And the supervisors, and, you know, I haven't heard from anybody. It really does amaze me. I mean, it's like, it seemed like everybody's gun-shy of that courtroom because they're going to be ID'd or whatever. That's why people wouldn't want to come in and testify. Look what they've done to me.
Now, Bob Lee, did he actually appear personally in court before when your trial started?
No.
He didn't. It was just one of his district attorneys.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And is the district attorney who's trying you, do you think, reluctant to try this case?
I think so.
What's the name of the district attorney?
His first name is Tong. No.
Tong No?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I know I saw him doing some of his case. He'd whipped out, he pulled out the boxes with the guns, and he pulled out little bags with a scale. He said, here are the scale, the implements of the crime, and that sort
yes.
of thing. And the courtroom was almost completely empty except for, you know, there was the judge, there were the court staff, there were the 12 jurors, the bailiff, your son was in the audience, and then there was me. And it was, I mean, I guess other, did you get it? Did anybody come to this trial?
Yeah, no, there has been some support from patients, for sure. But, you know, I did protest 2 days in Felton and 2 days in Santa Cruz. I just thought that I would see more bodies, and actually somebody from the press, other than yourself, and I'm real happy that you've come by. You've definitely taught me more about how to use the India media. I think it's a great place, and the free radio. I definitely encourage the use of the internet. Great way to get the message out. My downfall was that I didn't do my press very well. I waited to the last 4 days and basically designed all the signs and put it together.
It's pretty nice banners you had down there on Pacific and Cooper. I know it was right across from the referendum, the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel's Sunday final hurrah referendum, which they did. You were right across the street, right?
Yeah. Many thanks to Sign City and Felton for giving me or doing the banner and the shirts. They did the shirts in 1 day. Printed information on them. It was great.
What did the shirts say?
It has the company name, the Emporium. Shows the medical symbol and where it was founded and when.
We're talking with Roger Mensch of the Emporium. And, again, your phone number, if people want to either use your service or assist you in some way, is?
Oh, you can call 295-3511.
295-3511
yes.
is the number. And that should get you to a voicemail right now.
And what we do right now is a delivery service. Mm-hmm. After I've been waiting for this case to get over for a long time, and we'll move forward, hopefully, to establish some type of storefront. I'm looking forward to it.
So you're expecting to be found not guilty by this jury?
I am, yes. Yes, I am.
You're really,
Well, I don't want to jinx myself, right?
Right, right. I told you my own skepticism toward juries. I would love to have that happen. That would be so reassuring. It's just, unfortunately, juries are so likely to follow the dots rather than to simply look at the justice of the case. And I hope that if one juror, as we talked about before, is willing to just say no to this whole thing, you don't get found not guilty, but it's a hung jury. It means that if the prosecution wants to try you, they have to go back and do the whole case again, which
yeah.
they might be reluctant to do, given that it's not just the biggest case in the world. Really.
You know, Robert, they watched my house for 2 days. They'd seen no traffic. The officer and the expert also talked about these PO lists that I've never heard of before.
What's a PO list?
It's a payout list. It's a list, maybe shorthanded or whatever, that says who owes you money. They didn't find any of that around the house. They didn't find any large quantity of dried marijuana. I mean,
how much did they find?
You know, the only thing they were able to produce in front of me today was the four little baggies. They said that, why does somebody separate these bags other than they're for sale?
12 years for four baggies.
And they had between 3 grams and 3.6 grams of shake in them. And
it's pretty crazy.
It's a smoke screen, I'll tell you. It's They've been trying to keep this down for a long, long time. Big business, the federal government. It's just.
And it's also a cash cow for the local district attorney and the local police. It looks like. I mean, it's just.
Sure.
That's a big business.
It's depressing. If you got any questions for Roger, I guess you got a KZSC interview coming up pretty soon. You're going to do a call in, but you're welcome to hang here if you'd like. You can give a call here, phone number again, for all you people who forgotten how to use your phones. Come on now. The phone number is 427-3772. Give a call here. Let's use the resources of this man before he gets locked behind bars, for God's sake. Anybody have any thoughts or impressions of feelings? I mean, are people happy with this idea of Roger being hauled away? What implications does this have for the rest of us, for other medical marijuana growers? I guess that's the question I skipped over with you. What about WHAM? Did you inform them that this was happening, the corrals?
No, I didn't.
You didn't tell them?
No. I did the demonstrations. Everybody, Ben Rice represents WHAM.
He knew about it.
He knew it was happening. Oh, yeah, he knew. He's the one I went to.
Did he know the trial was coming up at this time?
I would think so.
Was he around the court? Did you ever see him in the court?
No, actually, I did not see him the whole time.
When you mentioned that there was a case that was happening in the next courtroom over and that is now currently undergoing deliberation as well.
That was my second attorney from the public defender's office. She was doing that one. And they kicked me because she's got the murder case going on now to Amy. And so that's why we postponed, but we also wanted to get our expert witness in, Chris Conrad.
But you said that the next court is over, there's a medical marijuana case going, right?
It was. It's in the jury's
it's in
deliberation.
In deliberation. Yeah. So this is an ongoing racket, an ongoing abuse that is happening not just to you but to a number of other people in this community, even as we speak right now, and not, you know, far away, not in Texas, not in Colorado, not in New Mexico, you know, not over in New Hampshire, but here.
Right here in Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz County.
That's right. Here in Santa Cruz County.
And this impacts the
city. You know what I do have?
Sure.
Excuse me.
Sure.
You know, we did the protests both in Felton and Santa Cruz, and I want to say that, you know, we were not bothered whatsoever by the authorities. They allowed us to protest. They made the people playing the music move their equipment, but they freely allowed us to do our little protest. And I hope it helps the cause.
Yeah, I mean, I
have people that come up.
Me too.
I have people that drive the whole way up from Merced. I have a doctor that drives the whole way up from there because I'm an hour and a half closer than Oakland or San Francisco. Trying to get the medication that legally we're allowed to have, they've made it basically impossible or very, very hard. You have to travel for a half a day to go get your medication. And it's time that things do change.
Yes, it is. And the problem, of course, is that they're picking you off, picking us all off one by one. I mean, the organizations that should be supportive of you, WHAM and other, you know, frontline activists, either haven't heard about this because you've been taken up with dealing with your defense and you're not the most sophisticated at this in terms of dealing with media. But, you know, it seems to me that this whole drug war is something that should be under close observation by people like WHAM, who have a lot of pull and a lot of power in this area. And I know that I've been publicly critical of them because they've allowed the city's medical marijuana law to remain uncontested. And it's been that law which for years, according to attorney and former care provider Kate Wells, has been responsible for there being no medical marijuana club in the city limits.
Oh, there is, no, that's changed. And actually, there's been a club operating down in Capitola.
But not in the city of Santa Cruz.
But there is now.
Not yet.
Yes, there is.
Which one are you thinking of?
The 903 on Pacific Avenue.
Ah, that's new to me. We have a caller. Maybe the caller is from the 903. Who knows? Let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on free radio with Roger, Sean, and Robert. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, can hear you. What's your name? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
I was calling you guys about regarding Wham.
Yeah.
And how the county is like only for Wham and won't recognize anybody else.
Right.
And that's like one of our biggest problems.
Yeah, I've been critical of Wham before. And I, you know, I've contacted the corrals by email and talked to some members of Wham and said, why don't you go to the city and change the medical marijuana law? I've just heard tonight that, you know, that there is a club that's opened up downtown. As far as I know, I talked to the planning department a week and a half ago. There aren't any clubs in town that are legal or acknowledged by the city as being there. But I don't care. I mean, we're not acknowledged by the feds, and we're here as a radio station.
I don't believe they fall under the club, so-called club category, because they have a different type of license.
Right. Well, is it a place you can walk into with your medical marijuana card and get medical marijuana?
That's correct.
Well, that's great. We're going to have to talk. Are they advertising? Do they want to be known?
That I don't know. That's why I'm...
Okay. Well, then maybe you should find out and get in touch with me next show, assuming you're not behind bars. Maybe, Sean, you can get in touch with me if...
Hey, Roger, good luck, man. It's Randy.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Randy.
All right, man.
Thanks, Randy.
All right. So at least somebody's listening. That's reassuring. Phone number, 427-3772. You talk to Roger while you got a chance. This could be a rare opportunity before he disappears behind the corridors of injustice. So yeah, I'd like to hear more about this new club, but, you know, when you feel it's appropriate to talk about it. I mean, I'm assuming if it's open to the public, or is it open to the public?
Yes.
And what's the name of it?
My friend Randy there went and checked it out.
Oh, okay. Let's see what we got here. We got another caller. Hi. Are you high? Say hello.
Hello? Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Talk to Roger.
You're on?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Basically, who is this?
This is Robert, and you're also on air with Roger and Sean. And who are you?
Oh, I'm Jake, a long-time client of theirs. I just want to know if they can stay out on the air, what precautionaries as private medical patients could take from getting in trouble with local authorities and stuff like that.
Okay, what can locals? Do you want to take that? You want to take your answer on the air, or you want to talk more, Jake?
Whatever. I'm having a hard time hearing you guys.
You're having a hard time hearing us?
Yeah.
Okay, let me try to beef it up a little bit there. How about now?
That's better.
How about now?
That's good. That's a lot better.
Okay. How can patients protect themselves?
Hey, Jacob.
How's it going?
Very good.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
I was just wanting to see if you guys could put out on the air, like, basic ways that private people can protect themselves from things that are going on, like the problems that you're having right now with legal access.
How can people protect themselves from the kind of problems you're facing?
Well, you want to make sure you definitely have your paperwork in order.
Right.
Right.
Cards, stuff like that. Also, other things, I wanted to know, I've heard other rumors, too, about people getting bogus, prescriptions and stuff like that. And
bogus prescriptions?
You know, I actually have not run into that. I thought I ran into it a couple weeks ago, and it's the first person I actually called a caregiving organization up in Humboldt. The paperwork was, like, destroyed. And I really thought that this guy wasn't going to pan out, but they had all the information, and he was actually a caregiver for a patient.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's been some concern about that. Talleyrand, who's a doctor at some point, I've heard him criticized as using medical assistance rather than writing out the prescriptions himself, and right. Somehow this is inappropriate. Right. What's your view on that, Roger?
I'm curious about it.
Oh, Jake, you got a view too. Go ahead.
What was that?
Go ahead.
Well,
no. What's your thought on that?
Well, my thought is just, I think it's, you know, kind of because of the false state legitimate stuff. There shouldn't be any way for people to get bogus cards and stuff. But I mean, there's still, you know, doctors out there that seem like can do it.
It's a little hard to hear you. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, it's just speak up a little more.
That's one of the issues that were brought up was whether the district attorney wanted to like make a problem that, oh, you just run up there and you just get it and you never see the doctor again. Now, the bottom line comes down is that the doctor wrote the prescription. It's my business. It's really right. Nobody else's. But when it comes to a medical assistant, you know, they have pharmacist people that do a lot of things these days, as well as medical assistants for the doctors. You go down to, what's it called down the street here, Planned Parenthood, and you have a lot of people that write or do a lot of stuff there in that office that's not a doctor. Mm-hmm. And they've helped us out tremendously. My girlfriend is disabled, as well as the other person that, I'm a state paid caregiver. I'm actually called a live-in aide.
Yeah, and even though you are, Judge Stevens would not allow you to, did he certify you as a caregiver?
No,
today?
No, they didn't, they would not allow to bring in the amount of the 3-pound limit. They don't want to bring in anything after the time I got arrested. At the time I got arrested, there was no limit.
And you weren't a caregiver when you were arrested? Is that
yes.
Was that the problem? You were a caregiver.
I was.
Well, what were you telling us about Judge Stevens not being willing to let the jury hear you were a caregiver?
Right, under his eyes, he doesn't believe I am a caregiver because he says that I don't provide the safety, the health, or the housing for any client.
And so the state disagrees with you. The state pays you to be a caregiver? Or is this a different caregiver in a different sense?
Perhaps? Well, they call it live-in aid, but I mean, I do get paid for taking care of two people.
That's a different kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
And are they medical marijuana patients themselves?
Yes, they are. They both are. They're the ones that attended the trial. So, and things didn't get much different. They were my patients before. They're my patients now. I have a card now, but I'm being prosecuted because they didn't have a card program in place back then. Right, we had to go up to Oakland or San Francisco to get it.
Wow. Again, this resumes 10:45 tomorrow, Department 4. If you're interested, that's down at 701 Ocean Street. You can, again, if you got questions, quickly call in. The number is 427-3772. And you can talk to Roger Mensch here before he takes off for the hinterlands. KZSC has a bigger listenership than we do, and they have more of a broadcasting range. So, put out your number on KZSC and also invite people to come to the final conclusion of the trial. And I guess there are numbers to call. You are giving numbers for people to call if you want to contact DA Bob Lee and ask him what the hell he's doing. His phone number is 454-2400, 454-2400. Unfortunately, I suspect if you try and call now, you probably can't get through. I'm going to try and see if I can. I suspect if they're like the supervisors, the district attorney's office does not have a special recording machine. I'm getting a message that says it's closed. Here, let's put it on.
Including holidays. Thank you for calling the Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office. Bueno, usted ha llamado a la oficina del fiscal del condado de Santa Cruz. La oficina ya está cerrada. Nuestro horario es...
Now, the question is... The question is whether they have an opportunity for the public to leave a message off hours, and I doubt it. Let's see, though.
Diario. Esto excluye los días de fiesta. Gracias por su llamada.
Is there a beep? Do we hear a beep? DA.
Hello. You have reached the Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office. Our office is...
So we find that if the public wants to contact the DA, they have to call between the hours of 8 and 5, Monday through Friday, which means that working people may find it hard to call in during that time because they're going to be working. Same thing is true with the supervisors. They apparently have enough to pay themselves $70,000 a year, but not enough to put in an answering machine that takes messages. Interesting. Interesting, isn't it? But you can give a call tomorrow to 454-2400. Tell Bob Lee, stop it.
There are two numbers that you can get a residency, and that is to the mayor.
You can contact Mayor Mike Rotkin, but unfortunately, Rotkin has no power over the prosecution of offenses. And I mean, you can ask him to, you know, introduce a resolution to have the police stop cooperating with this DEA bullshit.
They can all they could make me an officer of the court. They done it to the Corrales.
No, they could. And the Oakland. You're talking about the Oakland.
No, the Corrales were made officers of the court once the federal raid come down.
They were made. I guess they were given some city position, some city authorization.
The same thing that they did.
But remember that the federal courts have found that when the Oakland Cannabis Club did that with who was the guy up in Oakland who was being tried under
Jeff Jones.
That's
the OCBC?
It was the OCBC, but it wasn't Jeff Jones. It was somebody else who was tried, but who was also an officer of the cannabis. You know, officially, this Oakland gave him some specific jurisdiction and so forth. The feds ruled that doesn't matter because cannabis clubs are not legitimate care provider organizations. That's what the feds say. And my concern is that if the feds, they want to take you to federal court and argue that kind of shit, they can. But here this is a state court, and this is a local DA, Bob Lee, who's run allegedly on a humane platform, who is doing this to you and apparently to other care providers as well.
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
I think that's outrageous, and I think that people have to do what we can to stop that. And the phone number again to call tomorrow is 454-2400. You can, as I said, get a hold of Mayor Rotkin tonight at you can call him at 420-5020, and you can leave him a message, but the thing to tell him to do is to introduce a resolution that will essentially tell the police department not to cooperate with the arrest or investigation of any caregivers. And the state police and the city police were not involved in this operation. You just had sheriff's deputies, right? This is up in Felton.
Yeah, no, that's correct. So, but, I mean, you know, everything's happening down here in City Hall. Right?
No. This all comes out of the Board of Supervisors, which
no,
is...
No, I'm talking about I'm being tried here in the city.
Yeah, but that's not City Hall. It's in the city limits,
I mean,
but the city isn't doing it.
I misspoke.
It's the county.
Courthouse. I meant
right.
Santa Cruz Courthouse.
Right,
but
the mayor has no jurisdiction over there.
I understand.
Right.
But
nor do the supervisors. I mean,
but
supervisors
do. If there's laws that were put
city
in place
member,
in 92 allowing such things as being allowed to...
Right. I'm just saying the people you need to contact are the people who have the power, and those people are district attorney, board of supervisors, maybe the judges, DEA. But the city does not have power over prosecutions. Even if they were to say to you, you know, they point you, you know, Lord High. Well, I mean, it might make the prosecution less likely to go after you. But in fact, it's the choices are with the DA. If they want. And that's why the DA is responsible, and he's the person where the buck stops, and he's the person that should be held accountable for this nonsense. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We're going to take a musical break, and we will be right back.
My kids were talking about virtual reality. I flashed back to 69 when Neil first walked the moon. Like thousands of folks, I saw those footprints in the dust and heard it was a hoax done in a TV studio. About that time I started thinking, how do we know what's real? It's a fact. You can't always trust your eyes. One old man was laughing, yeah, and we'll be farming on Mars someday when pigs can fly. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be an end, but these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. I'd check it out real close if I were you. Every morning when I wake up, something else has changed. Things keep getting wilder.
never know what's coming next. On radio, video, television, you know, it's all the same. A world of sound bites, stage rights, and special effects. From salesmen to politicians, what a tangled web they weave. Computer-generated imagery, illusions for the mind. It's really getting harder to know what to believe. And there's a farmer out in Iowa who says his pigs can fly. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be, it isn't. But these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be, it isn't. But these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. I'd check it out real close if I were you. Mm-hmm.
And that's another song by Mike True, a traveling guitarist who is apparently undergoing some major surgery back east. I think he's in Ohio. Good luck, Mike, where we are. So we are, it's now a me rather than a we, because Roger and Sean have left the studio. They're going to probably be talking on KZSC. They're going to be calling in and talking to them at some point. That's the campus radio station. I think it's 88.1 or 88.9 FM. I'm not sure. But it's there at the left end of the dial, and the phone number is, what is it, 459-4039, something like that. That's what I remember from the old days. I don't think it's changed. Phone number here, however, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Give a call here if you want to check out what's cooking. In the meantime, while you're pondering that possibility, let's hear a few street interviews.
Well, it's about 3:25 in front of the Borders scene. Within the infamous 50 forbidden foot zone from the Instateller, I should say, the ATM machine, we're talking with...
Bajina.
And Bajina, you, you're having a little sip of water from a red jug, but you have some disturbing news?
Let's see. It was about 2 weeks ago. I woke up and walked through this corner, and there were some hippie kids flying a sign for change. And they left for a moment, and they left their stuff there, and they left to do something. And I looked around to see where they were, and about that time I saw Officer Peely come by. And
his badge number is?
I think it was 724, if I remember correctly. I have it written down somewhere.
I know Officer Seeley, I know Officer Perry, but maybe there is a new Peely. Who knows? That's not very a Peeling.
Peely. Maybe it was Petey. But I thought it was an L.
And what did he do?
He said, "Is this your stuff?" I said, "I'm responsible for it." He said, "Are you responsible for it? Is this your stuff?" I said, "I'm responsible for it. I'm claiming it as an L." And he said, "Well, blah, blah, blah." I started talking mad shit. And basically he said, "Next time I'm going to steal the stuff." And this is early in the morning. He said, "Next time I'm going to steal the stuff." And I said, "Well..." And I said something stupid, I guess it could be percepted as being stupid. I said, well, next time you're going to steal that stuff, the same thing may happen to you someday. Somebody might find your house and steal something from you. And from that point, he went off on me, grabbed me by the shoulder, and threw me down on that bench there. And
pointing to the bench that's nearest the Cooper Street.
Yep, SoCal.
Not Cooper Street, SoCal Avenue, sir.
Actually. Yeah, the avenue.
What time was this again? About 10 in the morning?
It was about 10 in the morning, yeah, 9:30. Uh-huh. And he just continued, he ran my name, and he just continue to browbeat me and threaten me and say that if I ever speak up, he's going to really fucking throw me down and kick my ass just for the hell of it. And so I got the bad redneck cop, and that's who he is, whatever his name is, 724.
Come by frequently?
He was walking, so I imagine he's got foot patrol.
And this was 2 weeks ago?
This is about a week and a half ago, something like that.
Seen him since?
No. Haven't seen him since.
Well, keep an eye out. Just
stay away from police when I can help it, because I get...
Hey, the police are your friends. Don't you know that?
Protective against them. Lots of people are your friends.
Hey, Bajani. Thank you.
Right on. Oi. Have a good day.
You too. We're talking with that notorious tabler, Laura Schaffer.
Schaefer.
Schaefer, with two F's and one A. She directs development at...
The Open Voting Consortium.
Is this some sort of attack on our Führer?
No, it's not an attack. It's just trying to make sure that we can elect people fairly, that we have a fair way of making sure...
Examine what literature you have on the table. You have a picture of the two rogues, Kerry and Bush. I said Kerry is the one who wanted 40,000 more troops to Iraq, and Bush is the one who started the war.
That's true, but we're never going to vote anybody that we want to be in power if our votes aren't getting counted. So, and we're never going to have instant runoff voting and things like that if we don't change the system. And I think one way of doing that is
being paid for this kind of behavior.
Very minimally. That's what I'm actually trying to do today, is to get some money so I can eat.
So you actually have to make money to get money.
Yes. I mean, I'm a fundraiser for my organization, as well as PR, as well as everything else. Hi.
We'll check out this woman's rap. And on the table it says $20 for New Leaf, $20 for Dharma, $40 for Kiva. Series of possible prizes you can win for raffle tickets. And a sign says, those who vote decide nothing, those who count the votes decide everything.
What are you making the tape for?
Free radio.
Oh, really? I was on free radio with...
Be on again.
All right. I was on with Louis LaFortune twice. Yep, and then I was on Community Access Television twice, and I was on KUSP once.
There you are, selling a raffle ticket.
That's right, thank you.
It's a beginning.
It is a beginning. My very first one, well, second one. Thank you.
Two tickets in one afternoon. No.
No.
How many have you sold, Sam?
I have sold, let's see. Gosh, I don't know now. I did come.
Mind is clouded.
At 3:20 in the afternoon, I had sold 35.
Yeah, this is all very interesting, but let's turn to something else. Here's an example of actually one of several cop watches that happened one evening about a week ago. This is a cop watch that took place down on Pacific around 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. And it's interesting, I think, to listen to simply because you get a sense of, well, not only what happened, but how do you do a cop watch? How do you describe what goes on? It's important, I think, to, if you're going to be using a tape recorder in this situation, I think that that's very helpful if you're on the streets and you see stuff going down, to try to describe it as it happens, as well as, of course, to watch it and to make it clear to the police and the person who's being victimized that you're watching, in case they want to pass on their name to you, in case they want to later call you as a witness, and so forth.
So it's about 11:45. We have a police car here at in front of Hoffman's Bakery, double parked, lights on. What's cooking, man?
Oh, nothing, bro.
Is it okay? Are you all right?
Good, Bob.
Are you being stopped?
Oh, yeah. I didn't make a complete stop over there.
A bicycle?
No. Your safety thing. Safety checkup.
Safety checkup?
Yeah.
Okay.
Police officer doing their duty.
Doing their duty?
Yeah.
You have a vehicle. Where's your car?
I don't have a car.
Oh, what were you, on foot or?
No, I'm just walking. On the bike, but.
I see. Well, it looks like a second squad car has arrived. Sure, I'm checking it out. Again, the same two squad cars before. How's it going?
you know me. I work at 7-Eleven. Oh, I got it.
And now we have two squad cars, one sort of parked and the other blocking half a lane of traffic on Pacific Avenue. That's car 126. The 126 car has this individual seated on the curb with a spotlight on him. This guy apparently with his red white bike parked here. And he's saying he does the 7-Eleven graveyard shift. He's apparently made some kind of a wrong way. He's got his wallet out. He's not in handcuffs. I suppose that should be said for these officers. And he's seated on the curb in the spotlight.
Okay.
And the officer who's stopping him is... So you were just driving along? Or?
Oh, I look like somebody they're looking for.
Oh, I see.
They're looking for somebody right now.
So they think you may be a suspect.
Well, no, they're looking for somebody, I guess.
Okay.
I live on SoCal 4381, SoCal, apartment number 5.
On SoCal?
SoCal Avenue. In San SoCal, California. Are you guys looking for somebody?
So we actually don't know what's going on. The police officer is filling out a report of some kind, comes back.
You know what? Yes, we kind of are looking for somebody.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if that's okay, I'm going to take your photo before you take off.
Sure.
Okay.
So the officer has asked if he can take a photo of the bicyclist, and he's agreed. Which you don't have to agree to unless you want to.
Officers, you know what I mean? They're just doing their job. I don't care. I don't mind helping them out. You know what I mean? If somebody's doing something wrong, you know, try to break into someplace down to, you know, someone's house or something, I'd like to report it. You know, and say, hey, you know, there's somebody trying to rob, going to someone's house or something.
Sure. And the officer has taken out a camera and he's about to take a picture of this person. Looks a little bit like a coal miner. He has a sort of a light on his strapped to his forehead. I guess he's a night light for riding on a bicycle. And his photo is being taken here. And he's explaining he works at 7. And he takes his light off and turns his cap around. His photo is being taken. He's being very apologetic, and of course, you face with guys with toting weapons at night. I guess that's what you do. Although, you know, he acknowledges that he's concerned about and has respect for what the police are doing here, obviously trying to apparently investigate some sort of crime. It looks like photo number 4 or photo number 5, and he's being asked the same question by another officer. Where does he live? He answers. And he's still waiting. And explains where he's coming from. And again, he's being asked for the third time, or is it the fourth or fifth time, where he lives. Hi. How's it going? And it's Pacific Avenue, so there's traffic going back and forth here, street traffic observing. Again, you have this situation where you have a police car blocking half the street. That's car 126. Another car behind it parked. The car that's blocking the street has both its headlights and its spotlight on, as well as its flashing, well, it has its red and blue top light on. And it just seems peculiar to me that this kind of interrogation would happen in this way. It's looks both humiliating, seems to indicate a greater threat than currently exists. And it's very, very public. He's being asked to show some, looks like show some ID or to look for something. He's looking in his pocket. He's taking off his coat. He's showing his arm. Looks like, I'm not sure why he's showing his arm. I don't think it's for tracks. It's for something else. I think he shows his upper tattoo mark. That's what, that was the issue. So perhaps they're investigating to see if there's some kind of deal going on. And he's being given a warning for having gone through a stop sign with a bike, looks like. And he's being wished a good night. And so, how'd that go?
Oh, they did what they had to do. They just do their job, you know what I mean? This is not the first time it's happened to me, you know. The other day, I was in the... That looked kind of like I was doing some smoking, like I was going to smoke a joint or something, so they pulled me over.
Same officers or different officers?
No, different officers, so I had to throw away my stash, but I have a cannabis card.
Why did you throw away your stash? You have a right to smoke if you have a cannabis card.
Well, at the time, I didn't have one.
Right. Actually, you have a right to smoke if the doctor has recommended it to you, even if you don't have such a card. What's your name?
My name is Robert.
And Robert... Nice-looking bike you have there.
Thanks. I'm glad they didn't take that away from
me. Hey, have a good night, Robert.
I've got someone else that's watching out for me.
Take
Thanks
care.
For being where you were at.
All right, man.
And you're tuned to 101.1. It's Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772 if you want to call in. We're doing some street interview review here, and we'll continue with that. This is a review from about 3 or 4 weeks ago when SAFE was holding, I think it was its year annual celebration. SAFE, again, is Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, Street Performers Union, that plays every Wednesday in front of New Leaf Market from 6 to 10. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, also has a table there. Tonight, Huff, which normally has had a table in front of New Leaf, in front of Borders every Thursday night, and a radio on that table playing this show, has not shown up because folks have got other things to do, and that table will probably be discontinued, although we will resume huffing and puffing when there are particular projects that we're undertaking, and people can always come to the Huff meetings, which do continue every week at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean, between 8 o'clock in the morning and 11 o'clock in the morning, down on Ocean Street, as I said before.
So periodically throughout the evening, you're going to hear these little interruptions as we attempt to track down the man who has sped up the ever-slow umbrella, Robert. Some regard it as a curiosity. Others regard Robert as an essential part of the downtown scene and not a person to be abused or certainly not a person to be assaulted.
And this refers to an incident that happened with Robert Steffen, who is the man in pink who walks about very, very slowly on Pacific Avenue. And that evening he was assaulted by someone, and we were questioning him, and we did an interview with him, part of which I played on the air, almost a month ago. But this is what follows. Again, we're talking about the annual anniversary of SAFE, or thereabouts, and some awards that were given out.
The announcement is that we also have an award. We actually will do an annual award. This is our year celebration. We've been here every week for a year now, every Wednesday.
Well, let's take over the place.
And we are. We're taking over the place. Exactly. That's exactly what we've been doing. So we wanted to honor... We're going to honor one person, have an award, but we had a tie. So we're stuck with two people getting an award tonight. And in honor of outstanding service for our community, we wanted to honor two people who was part of a voting and involved in the city very, very, very intensely, and it was not easy for them, and we want to support them in their hard work. So, first...
Hush up back there.
wanted to stick these little things in here for our awards. This one is for outstanding service for our community. SAFE recognizes Robert Norse.
Wow!
This award.
Yes!
On February 2nd, 2005. For our first anniversary celebration for running for city council in 2004. We want to thank you very much. As I said, we had a tie. We also had Coral Brune. So for outstanding service for our community, SAFE recognizes Coral Brune with this award February 2nd, 2005. Our first anniversary celebration, thank you for being part of City Council and helping us in the community. And we think you guys should be recognized as working so hard for the community. So come and take your award. This is...
Take your award.
Come take your award. You come. Yay! And thank you so much for your hard work. Get involved in the city council and change the laws. The laws are ridiculous. We can't do what we're doing right now most of the time. A couple of us can't do it. One of us can't do it. A group of us are lucky we were able to do this. This is very unusual and really, really not something that would be allowed. This is against the law. Why? This is ridiculous. It shouldn't be against the law.
Everything
so
against the law.
We need to really change the law. So come on down and either vote for these people or get into the city council and change the law.
Damn
the man. Sounds good.
All right.
I would like to give a special note of appreciation to the people who kept this thing going week after week. I show up at the table like an hour and a half late, and I leave as early as I can. But there's some people who come here faithfully every week, even if they're alone.
Like
and that,
sounds like Americans.
The two people who do that quite regularly, there are more than two, but I know two who do it regularly. And then one of them is right there. That's Valerie Christie. Hey, Vanguard Valerie. Hey, right. And the weirdo with the hat who's always getting the food from God knows where, it's Meriwether Mike. And then singing songs, regardless of those who try to soapbox on and on. With the best voice, the strongest voice, it's Valerie Promise. And then the questionable gorilla singer who probably should be in a goddamn lizard lounge instead of here. Gregarious Greg! Not to mention Sheriff Roger, the infamous Coral. And everybody else who I may not even remember may have forgotten here.
And for one final show, for all the beloved people who come out to this wonderful gathering.
Got Mobile Mike here. He's Maniac back. Maniac Mike, Mobile Mike, whatever he is. He's one of the million mics. It's 9:10 outside the SAFE event number 53. 1 year of SAFE stirring. Mike, what's the story? You're on the run from a hacky-sacking ticket. What's the story?
I have a smorgasbord of hacky-sacking, jaywalking, resisting arrests for not sitting down, a smorgasbord of uselessness that our taxpayers have to pay to these evildoers
You're talking about Pam Bechtel?
Yeah, I'm talking about the whole force of idiocy of our great free nation.
So, how have you been in town, or have you been skirting the authorities?
A little bit of both. I've been in town for a little while. I went down to Monterey for a little bit. Got busted on the beach
for what?
For sleeping on endangered property. And got a big fat ticket by the Monterey police.
Did they give you a place to go to sleep?
Oh, no, they didn't. No, they just told us to leave the premises.
Maybe to go sleep in court.
Yeah, go sleep in court, go sleep in jail. It's a nice, friendly citizenship.
You've
we have
back to Santa Cruz.
Human beings.
Are you sleeping outside tonight?
No, I'm just in my car for now. And I'm going down.
That's still illegal, mister.
Oh, my God. I'm so. I don't know what to say.
How many times have I told you?
I'm going to say, save the buffalo.
And who is this guy? Where did you pick him up?
I don't know. He's been stalking me ever since I mentioned some buffalo thing.
I see. Very interesting.
I've been here 5 years and I don't think
this
I've
is this is this is the, this is the Buffalo. Yes, I've interviewed you before.
Oh,
what's been happening? Any tickets, hassles, police excitement?
Oh, all that shit. Oh, yeah. I mean stuff. Excuse me. I know it's stuff.
Oh no, we can say poo poo on the radio.
Poo poo. Okay, yeah, all that poo
poo, shit, feces. What, yeah. Piss, shit, crap, motherfucker, cocksucker, and tits.
That kind of covers it.
You mentioned cunt and prick, I suppose.
Yeah. And, you know.
Or effluence.
We don't want no tying me down. We don't want no fooling around. We want to be free.
There you have it. Well, why don't you read your poem?
All right. Robert Norse. That fat cat.
And I'm going to leave this poem, which celebrates me. Hey, thank you very much. There's not much time left on this show. You can, however, call in if you want for the next 15 minutes. That is the time allowed and allotted. You are tuned to 101.1 FM and also www.freakradio.org. Let's see what we got here. Tomorrow morning in Watsonville, Richard Quigley is going back to court. Richard is a person who's been fighting the helmet law, and he's got an interesting court hearing coming up. I think it is at 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's in Watsonville for those who want to make the trek down there. Of course, there's a court hearing also tomorrow for the case we just heard today, Roger, who's here in the studio. Roger Mensch, who is facing a huge amount of time for being a medical marijuana care provider, apparently. And final arguments are happening in Department 4 tomorrow at 10:45. But if you're interested in Quigley's case, that's down in Watsonville. It's an interesting case because Judge Barton has directed the Highway Patrol to, in essence, address his helmets as correctable violations, which the California Highway Patrol has... The Central California Highway Patrol has issued orders not to do to all of its officers, apparently, which are going to go back into Barton's court, and Barton's going to, you know, Quigley's going to say, I tried to get this signed off, Your Honor, but the Highway Patrol issued an order essentially countermanding your order, and the question is, who's going to be the superior authority, Barton or the Highway Patrol? And that will be interesting to hear about, and it'll be coming up in court tomorrow in Watsonville. I don't think I'm going to be there. I'm going to think I'm probably hustling up to San Francisco to get Street Spirits. That's the homeless newspaper. It comes out every month and is distributed by homeless people and sold by homeless people so they can cause a little change there. This one's a bit late. Usually comes out March 1st. I say the first of every month would be out March 1st. It isn't this time because they're publishing late. Apparently there's a late article up there. But it's a good paper. And if you want to get a copy of it, you should leave a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We're moving distributors. The former distributor is being moved to a different distributor, and we'll have more information on that. I'll have more information on Sunday when I come back on my show in the evening, I should say in the morning. Sometimes I get a little confused here. Which happens at 9:30 on Sunday mornings and goes till 1. So check me out then. I should have some more info for you on how to get your Street Spirit. One place you can usually find it, though it sometimes shows up later in the month, is at the Homeless Service Center, which is out at River and Coral Street, or 115 Coral Street, out where you can get a meal around 4 o'clock, and I'm told even something of a breakfast, though it's not too clear how much of a breakfast you get. I'm going to be talking on Sunday about a number of things, more interviews and such, hopefully a little better edited than today, although no promises. The city council meeting happened on Tuesday. There was only an afternoon session, as those who tuned in on Sunday know, those who looked at the city council agenda, and you can see it online. You can go onto the city council website, check out their agenda there. Mike Rotkin, the mayor, did his thing again of essentially constricting and ignoring the public. What he did here on Tuesday was he moved oral communication from its normal time at 7 o'clock in the evening to the end of the afternoon session, which meant that you, if you wanted to speak, you didn't know when you would be able to speak unless you sat through the entire session. He also claimed that that would be at 5:30 if the session, it'd either be at the end of the session or he would interrupt the session at 5:30 so people could speak. He broke his word on that one. He didn't interrupt the session. In fact, when I talked to Leslie Cook, she said it didn't happen until after 6 o'clock. So you'd have had to wait again, not knowing when oral communication was. What is oral communication? Well, for those who don't know, it's the time when you can actually speak for 3 minutes on any subject to the city council, even those that aren't on the agenda, which for homeless people are issues like the criminalization of the poor, maybe things like rent control, maybe police abuses, which you don't get to talk about because the city council isn't interested in those issues. But the time you can talk about it, of course, are now being cut back, set aside, moved ahead, moved back, made difficult to access by the mayor. And I filed a Brown Act complaint about that. And Brown Act's a law that says that there are certain requirements on legislative bodies like the city council that says, that require it to be open to the public, to let the public know what's going on, to give the public a chance to speak, to give the public a chance to attend the meetings and so forth. And I'll be discussing that Brown Act complaint, which is the second Brown Act complaint in 1 month I filed, next time on Sunday when I come back. For those who followed Amy Goodman today, that's Democracy Now!, the daily show that comes out Monday through Friday. Great news show. I always listen to it if I can, really enjoy it. There was a story which I actually picked up earlier from ABC News that secret FBI report questions Al-Qaeda capabilities. No true Al-Qaeda sleeper agents have been found in the U.S. This isn't by some wild lefty outfit. It isn't by Democracy Now! Or Amy Goodman. It isn't by, you know, Robert Norris or Ralph Nader or even John Kerry, you know, for that matter. It's by ABC News, and apparently it's a report from the FBI. And here's what it says. Secret FBI report obtained by ABC News concludes that while there is no doubt Al-Qaeda wants to hit the United States, its capability to do so is unclear. Al-Qaeda's leadership's intentions to attack the United States is not in question, the report reads. However, their capability to do so is unclear, particularly in regard to spectacular operations. We believe Al-Qaeda's capability to launch attacks within the United States is dependent on its ability to infiltrate and maintain operatives in the United States. The 32-page assessment says flatly, to date, we have not identified any true sleeper agents in the U.S., seemingly contradicting the sleeper cell description of prosecutors assigned to 7 men in Lackawanna, New York in 2002. Limited reporting since March indicates Al-Qaeda has sought to recruit and train individuals to conduct attacks in the United States, but is inconclusive as to whether they have succeeded in placing operatives in this country, the report reads. U.S. government efforts to date have not revealed evidence of concealed cells or networks acting in the homeland as sleepers. It also differs from testimony given by FBI Director Robert Mueller, who warned in the past that several sleeper cells were probably in place. Quote, our greatest threat is from Al-Qaeda cells in the United States that we have not yet been able to identify, Mueller said at a Senate Select Intelligence Committee hearing in February 2003. Finding and rooting out Al-Qaeda members once they have entered the U.S. and have had time to establish themselves is our most serious intelligence and law enforcement challenge. When the secret report was issued last month on February 16th, Mueller testified at a hearing before the same committee that the lack of evidence concerned him. I am concerned about what we are not seeing, he said. So we're just not sure if there isn't an elephant outside in the backyard because we haven't been checking every minute. That's my addition here. The report does cite several cases which individuals have been seen as potential sleeper agents, including a member of the Saudi Arabian Air Force training at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. The Saudi was sent home after it was discovered he provided information to Al-Qaeda figures in Saudi Arabia, including coordinates on landmarks in the U.S., the report says. It's not surprising because we believe the Saudi military is infiltrated at the junior officer level in Saudi Arabia, said Dick Clark, a former White House counterterrorism czar and now an ABC News consultant. And there are so many of us who come here for training. So many of them who come here for training. The report also says Al-Qaeda is shifting tactics because its leaders are aware of profiles singling out Arab adult males and so forth. However, no cells. 3.5 years, constitution scrapped, no sleeper cells. Sounds like those phantom-like weapons of mass destruction to me. You be the judge. Here's another report from truthout.org, U.S. lost control in Iraq 3 months after the invasion. A report by U.S. Army official historians said the military was hampered by the failure to occupy and stabilize Iraq in 2002. The U.S. military lost its dominance in Iraq shortly after its invasion in 2003, a study concluded. As a result, the report by the U.S. Army official historian said the military was hampered by its failure to occupy and stabilize Iraq in 2003, and as a result, the military lost its dominance by July 2003 and has yet to regain that position. In the 2 or 3 months of ambiguous transition, U.S. forces slowly lost the momentum and the initiative gained over an off-balance enemy, the report said. The United States, its army, and its coalition of the willing have been playing catch-up ever since. The report was authored by Major Isaiah Wilson, the official historian of the U.S. Army for the Iraq War. Wilson also served as war planner for the Army's 101st Airborne Division until March 2004, Middle East Newsline reported. His report, not yet endorsed as official Army history, has been presented to several academic conferences. In November 2003, the military drafted a formal plan for stability and post-war combat operations, Wilson said, termed Phase 4. The plan was meant to follow such stages as preparation for combat, initial operations, and combat. There was no Phase 4 plan, the report said. While there may have been plans at the national level, even within various agencies within the war zone, none of these plans operationalized the problem beyond regime collapse. There was no adequate operational plan for stability operations and support operations. Other military commanders, including former Central Command Chief Tommy Franks, General Tommy Franks, have disputed Wilson's conclusions. They said the military entered Iraq with a stabilization plan. I think it was a sell-off-the-country plan that Bremer had. But that's my comment. That's Paul Bremer, the former Führer of Iraq, U.S.-appointed Führer. I am running out of time, and there's an interesting debate I recommend to your attention on Truthout, www.truthout.org, on should the U.S. get out of Iraq. And it's a very interesting debate because it's a lot of people on the left talking about what can be done and maybe we should get out, but maybe we got this responsibility and so forth and so on. It's quite extensive, and I recommend people take a look at it who are interested in this question. Lots more stuff to talk about. Not really any time to talk about it. I thank you for being, well, with your ear to the radio for this particular edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is Robert Norse. I'll be back on Sunday with another edition. If you want to call me between times, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll get back to you. And we will try to follow what's happening with our man who's going to trial, or actually concluding his trial tomorrow. And you can check out that case by going down to Department 4 and checking it out at 10:45. It's, again, the case of Roger Minch, and he will be receiving, the jury won't necessarily come to a verdict, but those will be the final arguments, which should give an interesting overview of the case, both the defense and the prosecution, most of which you've heard tonight. Let's go out on a little music by Mike True, and I'll see you next time. Or actually, you'll hear me next time, and maybe I'll hear you.
They tell me I'm still alive. They point their fingers saying you have survived. Then they gather up their atom bombs, their guns and their spears, and whisper in the microphone, you got nothing to fear. Ooh, you're one of the lucky ones.
me I'm still alive. Don't be afraid of the dark, they say. Go find another place to hide. Let us take care of business. We'll only steal what we can't buy. Now don't you worry about the future. It's all about mom and apple pie. Saying, ooh, you're one of the lucky ones. You have survived. From the sky. Just drink the bottled water, wear a funny mask, get the small price to pay. Gonna make the world a safer place so we can live the American way. Saying, ooh, you're one of the lucky ones. You have survived.
standing in her corner. She told me she was trying to find a way. I got to leave before I get my shoulder. Cause she ain't moved in Dilly Wally days.
Thank you. tattered soul. Waiting for the sun, waiting for the sun, waiting for the sun. Mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me.